Boom! I am so sorry. 2 weeks late on the season finale. I apologize. I just had a couple of weeks where every time I was about to turn on the microphone and record an episode, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I think I've probably felt a bit. I think I felt a bit depressed, or like I haven't really got anything to say. I haven't had much communication with people unless it's over text or voice notes and stuff. I've just felt a bit dead brained. So yeah, season finale. That's your lot until 2021. I'm not sure about when in 2021. It'll be early 2021. Don't worry. I'll resume these. But yeah, I need to have a little bit of a break from it. My deadline for the book is the 1st of March. It's going well, making nice progress, but I need to knuckle down and focus on that. Just emptying my trash bin there on the computer. And then they'll be gigging and stuff again. I haven't really been writing any stand-up. I wrote a bit of stand-up about my nan's ear. My nan's got a little nugget ear. I spoke about it on another episode. So it was just a transcription of that off-the-cuff bit of repartee about my nan's nug ear. I also wrote a joke that I don't think I can repeat. And I posted it up on Twitter about 5 different times and then deleted it because I got cold feet. Just say it's about Remembrance Day. They call it Remembrance Day. They call it Remembrance Day, but a lot of the people we're honouring can't even remember not to shit themselves. Okay, that is the joke. That's all it is. It's ridiculous. It's supposed to be offensive and disrespectful. Breeze past it. It's not going to be for everyone. Some people are going to go, they're going to turn off. Yeah, turn off the podcast after that. I mean, true, I thought you was a good guy. I thought you cared for the elderly. I thought your whole thing was a saviour of the elders, was the dementia whisperer, not laughing about incontinence. I tried to balance. The sort of a midpoint between respect, showing respect to my elders, and bullying them and undermining them, but not to their face. Not to their face. I wouldn't do that. Always respectful when I'm talking to them face to face, when I'm in my room. And nothing can touch me. And any repercussions that happen are virtual. Then it's time for me to bust out my real self. Which is joking at the vulnerable. Joking about the vulnerable. The vulnerable being the butt of the jokes. But actually, someone recently, I was joking, of course, someone said about my Navarra article. I had a lovely balance of light and shade. But also wonder if you could bring the more overtly compassionate and political tones into your stand-up a little bit too. I have always been a bit averse to that. I replied, really glad you liked it, etc. Thanks so much for the feedback. I definitely have more compassionate stuff in my stand-up, but for some reason I started to remove it. I was getting bored of the material. But writing a book and missing stand-up and going through a plague has made me want to lean away from the more brutal stuff. Incredible Australian comedian Steve Hughes. It's Steve Hughes, isn't it? Australian comedian Steve Hughes, yeah. He hadn't gigged for a long time. I think he was living in the Australian outback for a bit. And on his return gig at Glee, I performed as well in Birmingham. And when I came off stage, he said, that was great stuff, man. Brutal. That was fucking brutal. You just went into it, man. I was like, that was the best compliment I've ever got. I really appreciate that. And from an absolute legend of comedy, and the type of comedy that I want to, that I aspire to. He, you know, very confessional sit down and puts forward these anecdotes that are about suicide attempts and druggy debauchery, which is perfect. That's stuff I love. But yeah, I want to be a bit more economical with the brutal stuff. And I've always been reluctant to bring politics to the stage because I don't feel very secure in my political stance or my political identity. And growing up in a Tory household, I wouldn't want to alienate people like my parents or my dad more than anything. My mum isn't politically literate. She knows she doesn't like what the government have been doing for the past 5 years, but she wouldn't. She wouldn't be able to identify what are traditional conservative values, what are traditional Labour values. But I'm so full of rage at the moment at this disgusting cronyism and clientelism of the government, at the cynical perpetuation of the culture wars to maintain relevance, at the psychopathy of border control. I think it will bleed into the live work. Maybe I'll become more politically engaged, politically vibrant on stage. I mean, even with Priti Patel, even with her, she's the main one. She feels she sees being dispassionate and inhumane as a strength. As something to brag about and flaunt her sociopathy. And so, like, there's the charter flight deportations to Jamaica and other Commonwealth countries, and it's utterly inhumane to deny a Black Britons citizenship when they've lived here for so long. I'm ashamed of our merciless immigration system. It's overseen by Priti Patel, who prides herself on a lack of demonstrative compassion, or actually a lack of compassion full stop, and that to her is strength. We mustn't desecrate people's lives for political capital. These actions are a stain, a blight on our national conscience. Patriotism. Who wants to stand up for a country that does that? Reading a good book about conservatism, actually. We know the strain of conservatism has it's given way to a very nationalistic right, far right ideology. It said here about pragmatic conservatism. Pragmatic conservatism relies on older books called Conservatism by Edmund Fawcett. Pragmatic conservatism relies on higher-level, context-free maxims of wise government. A distinguished recent defender was Anthony Quinton, who described the task of government as driving a car along a narrow, winding road. How fucking boring! That's what I don't want. I don't want straight-line, dull pragmatism. I mean, the thing I take umbrage with is conservatism that's all about human limitations. I'm capable of anything, mate. I can be in the SAS, Dad. I could go skip if I devoted some time and energy into cultivating that skill. I could beatbox. I could do slalom. Is that how it's pronounced? Slalom. Is that skiing? Slalom. Slalom. Slalom consultant. Slalom. Slalom skiing. Yeah. Yeah. In which downhill skiers swerve back and forth between gates or poles. Just normal skiing, isn't it? Slalom. Slalom. Oh, I could be a slalist. Be a slalist. Not done any type of skiing before. And I once walked in snow, fell over, hit my knee on a dirty drain. My leg rotted off to the bone and then rotted back together again. Or group, not rot, the opposite of rotting. My leg rotted and then unrotted. So that had a nice clean shin. Actually didn't leave any marks. And even the doctor was baffled. So it's probably some type of bacterial infection that got nasty. Like I remember an episode, an issue of FHM. It's a special edition one that had like, it's a different time, but it had freaks and, you know, disgusting pictures and stuff. And there's a bloke who had a hole for a face. Like his whole face was just a hole. Like no facial features, just a head with a hole in it. That's from a bacterial infection. Like a cubby hole. You could use it. You could use his face as like a, to store books I would need to store. Or compost. So this, so politics, his politics of imperfection, though confined to the British tradition, was perhaps the best recent philosophical history of conservatism. It includes religious traditions, Hooker, Burke, Coleridge, Newman, Coleridge, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the author of Kubla Khan. You wouldn't think an opiate addict would follow conservatism and secular traditions. Oh, what was that little thin ventriloquist puppet man who ran for the conservative leadership, did all the walks, got like quite a thin sort of like, what's the word, is it racinated? What's racination? He's got a face like a ventriloquist dummy whose eyelids are hanging off. Like Joe Biden's got a similar look so deracinate to remove. No, it's nothing. No, not even close. Joe Biden's got the same look, but he is of an age, whereas this guy is just emaciated. And he went over to Afghanistan and smoked opium. And secular traditions like Halifax, Bolingbroke, Hume and Disraeli, treating them as compatible expressions of a single outlook that takes politics as the management of human limitations. Oh, this is why I'm an idealist. The thing about being an idealist and a utopian is you know you're never going to attain that utopic vision, but why not lean in that direction? And while trying to create a better idealistic world, you can do it in an incremental way. And that incrementalism is part of pragmatism. But don't, you know, set your heights high. Don't automatically, before you've set off, restrict yourself. Quinton advised Margaret Thatcher and was not a dogmatic free marketeer or dogmatic anything. A utilitarian in ethics, an empiricist about knowledge, and a materialist about what there is. Quinton looked on philosophy as the challenging of assumptions, including his own, in the spirit of Hume, who once had asked Horace Walpole, "If you do not like argument and wits, what do you like?" God, I mean, again, a materialist. I'm an etherealist. Utilitarian in ethics. For the greater good. But then in arguments about for the greater good, like my Filipino colleagues, they said they believe in Duterte's extrajudicial killings of drug addicts because to them, addicts are a blight on society. So they'd be better off dead. I'm not going to support an ethos that can be interpreted in such a way that it justifies murdering me. I don't want to be murdered. I was reading another article here. Well, one of my favorite political writers, David Bromwich. Or Bromwich. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. See ya. That was my dad interrupting. He fucking dad. I already told him that I'm recording a podcast. And still, he has to bellow. My nan, when she was going nutty, really a little natty bastard, she drew on purple eyebrows and held up the eyebrow pencil and told me she'd aborted her baby with it. And I wish that baby had been dad. But then if dad had died, then I wouldn't have existed. I wouldn't have been a little twinkle in daddy's nutsack. It's only cycled by David Bromwich, which is America Ungovernable. He's really good at reevaluating current orthodoxy in a way that isn't too reactionary or contrarian, even though I've spoke about contrarianism before. I think, like, contrarian to who is it? You're always going to be contrary to something, but it's whether you're just purposely disagreeing with whatever the current orthodoxy is just to be a pain in the asshole. So he said, one had to look to the conservative press to catch a glimpse of the miscarriages of Me Too, for example, or abuses of authority in the early hunt for a Trump-Russia connection. He really does a lot of overreach. Yeah. On the other hand, one relied on the corporate liberal media for truths suppressed or ridiculed on the right. Oh. Concerning the reality of climate change or Trump's likely reasons. Oh my goodness. I don't know it's gotta keep going, in it. Final episode. Maybe ever. Maybe I've just had enough. Can't do this with you anymore. No. None of you invested, are you? I paid all this money for this equipment and nah, you give me nothing. Fucking ingrates. Nah, mate, joke, I love you all. Laugh through it. Laugh through any doubt you may have about your own sense of fun. Laugh through any doubt you may have about your own sense of fun. Oh, yes, thank you, me. Thank me for being fun. Make up a song, ha, 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 that will get you going, get you pumped, cause you're fun, 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 fun. Ignore what other people say about you. Loving the smell of your own body fluids. Okay. I'm actually very, very clean. Even at the height of my addiction, I would regularly put like hair masks and conditioners and stuff onto my hair, fold up my clothes, wash them, brush my teeth about 8 times a day, which is now why I now have receding gums. I'm a very clean person. So, the ideological division of labour in honest reporting taken to this length is new in this country and it is ominous. And he goes on, young people especially feel they can participate by giving up things they used to hold dear. The wish for safety, for example, or the opportunity to think for themselves. But it is not true that such a renunciation of one's will, in effect, delegating conscience to the movement, reliably becomes a gain for someone else. Black Lives Matter is a tremendous slogan because it is a reminder. The very fact that the reminder was necessary said something. But the BLM emphasis on the unitary burden and demand of black people, as if they were a collective entity, presses out of the picture the reality of black persons. Nor has any reporter tried to gauge how many black people agree with BLM. not the three-word sentence, but the named movement under whose banner the crowds of activists have marched. Yeah. Isn't it reductive to assume that a broad, diverse spectrum of people who happen to have black skin are thinking as a single unit? So, which is something in the next iteration, the next evolution of that movement, something that will have to be scrutinized. But then I think any kind of social movements, I don't want to be part of a movement, any movement. I don't, unless I am the head of that movement. And I don't think I'll qualify for Black Lives Matters. Because they're a leaderless organization, movement. They're a leaderless movement. And my main setback is that I am not black. I'm not black. I know that might come as a surprise to some of you. I just ain't black, man. I am not a black man. So, yeah, I probably won't be the leader of Black Lives Matters. So I'm going to read from... Oh, yeah, another thing that David Bromwich said. Wait, I've got it here on my Twitter. You might have read about it on my Twitter. I do think some of the sort of professorial finger-wagging that David committed within that article, it downplayed. One sec, just getting it. So yeah, there's sort of professorial finger wagging at protesters, like the ones who dumped a Statue of Columbus into the harbour, ignores or downplays police aggression and overreach. I got the sense that he felt that the police and law enforcement were not infallible, but that we should, they were the ones who were under siege. That it wasn't reciprocated in any way. That they didn't commit any kind of unlawful aggressions, which we know is bullshit. Expressions of group contrition have long been a part of American culture. They draw on what is ultimately a religious emotion, the human need for atonement. I want to atone at the fact that when I was about 6 years old, I made up the fact that I'd seen a dog ghost. So I had something to talk about that day with my mum. And then I never owned up to that fact. So it just got absorbed into family lore. And every now and again, lore, L-O-R-E. And then every now and again, it'll come up. Oh, you saw a ghost, didn't you? You saw a ghost at Nanny Vera's. Do you remember that? You saw a ghost at Nanny Vera's, didn't you? And I'll go, yes, that was weird. Saw a ghost. Yeah, that should have been a kind of like a defining, life-changing event for me. I mean, seeing an actual ghost. Seeing an actual ghost, having everything, science completely disproved, the impossibility of ghostdom, having it confirmed to you as an actual reality that there's a little dog ghost knocking about Nanny Vera's house. Now I saw it, and it stank. I don't know why I added that extra bit that it stank, but. Because then there's more questions. What did it stink of? It smelled of clementines. About clementines and Toby Carvery. Weird combination. Smell of clementines and Toby Carvery. That's a typical ghost, lawyer. Whew. Weird mixture in the nostrils. Oh, okay. So what else can you sort of explain about this dog ghost? I tasted it. Did you? Did it taste as it smelled? No. Why did I say no? Would have been the end of that question. But nope, didn't taste the Toby Carveries and Clementines. It tasted like fallen rain. Tasted like fallen rain. And bulbs. Tastes like fallen rain and bulbs. Ghosts, eh? Weird combination of stuff. Weird combinations. So, yeah, that was a bit about ghosts. I imagine ghosts to actually taste like the butter beer, like the Harry Potter butter beer, which is lovely. I'll end this podcast by... I've got a couple of old notebooks here, but I'll give them a little read. Old stand-up notebooks. Fart triggers, laugh triggers, fart. Ouroboros. I don't think that's how you pronounce it. Serpent eating its own tail. If you smile, the whole world thinks you're bloody cheeky. That's my motto. The fuck? Sucked up by his knob hole. Boys born in London's Chelsea can expect to live nearly 9 years longer than those in Blackpool. What does that final 9 years look like? I saw an elderly man yank out his balloon catheter because he thought one of his testicles had been sucked up by his knob hole. That's actually true. Oh, mate, I need to be looking at this stuff for the old fucking book. I saw the same man offering a balled up lump of poo to a visiting dog. The Chelsea boys can have their 9 years. Oh, I'll go and write that one down. So that's a really old book. That was like when I just started doing comedy. Oh, fucking hell. So popular. Whenever they remember the... in co-ed addiction, recent note. I had grief counseling at work today. I happened to mention I'm a recovering drug addict. Any opportunity. Another woman spoke about losing her entire family in a car crash when she was 18. When the counselor was providing examples of loss, he said, we all grieve. Whether over your entire family, points to her, or whether it's over drugs, points to me. Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. No, that was not good. Jewish Comedian of the Year competition prevented from progressing to the semi-finals after they discovered I'm a Quaker. And we're the real marginalised group. There's literally only four of us. Banned from the Amish reservation for leaning up against the barn while listening to Happy Hark on my phone. We were the Amish sons. That I wasn't banned, but I got told off for playing Happy Hark or the Bonkers compilations to a little Amish boy who enjoyed the music. They got greasy hair, the Amish. Very greasy hair. To make the mush seem more appetizing, we, the mush boys, strip off and pour it over our bodies. Sometimes I'll coquettishly flick a pee off of my pubis. What are you doing there, you naughty boy? If they swallow you, it will disrupt their airflow and increase their risk of choking. Oh, so said in a sexy voice, sexy, enticing voice. If they swallow you, it will disrupt their airflow and increase their risk of choking. Sexy boys posing alongside mushed up food for people with advanced dementia. Pranks with a delayed payoff. Purposely raising my son wrong. Planting an acorn in the front garden and angling it towards my parents' house. A resident's jaw dislodged and slid off of her face like a typewriter carriage. That is true. The temporary suspension of a dementia. A fleeting lucidity in the realisation that she's 84 years old and stuck in a care home. There's panic in her eyes. A strained voice says, "I know where I am. For the love of God, kill me. Kill me now. Fucking kill me now. End it. I can't go on with this. I cannot go on with this charade. I'm in agony all the time." The jaw slides back, her mandibles reattach, and dementia resumes. "Oh, my mummy. Oh, my daddy. Art thou in heaven? Heaven be my name." Blah, 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 blah. That was what she used to do. "Oh, my mummy. Oh, my daddy. Art thou in heaven? Hallowed be thy name." Stasis, Diogenes of Sinope, lived in a tub. For years, I had a small hermetic existence. I was tubbing. 4 foot plat, face like a sinkhole, lagoon green, fervently political, but more of a in the bath at 3 a.m. activist. Reams of Twitter madness. That is what life was like for a long time. There's a lady at work called Avis. For the duration of my 14-hour shift, I referred to her as Mavis. Another colleague came up to me and said, "You know her name is Avis, not Mavis." I replied, "Avis isn't a name." Avis, who overheard this exchange, came into the room and said, "Yes, it is." I then tried to argue with Avis that Avis wasn't a name, just to save face. I chose whatever religion afforded me the most legally mandated prayer breaks at work. Quakers have to live as if they're in a constant state of prayer and contemplation. So I became a Quaker. When I'm at work, I don't do anything. I just sit or don't even go to work. I'm that committed to being a Quaker that I don't work. At the Wellington in Waterloo, in the toilet cubicle, there was a guy masturbating in the cubicle next to mine. I heard fapping. I heard sex noises emitting from his earphones. I saw his foot quiver. Rather than get up and leave, I thought, I need to see how this pans out. So as a kind of endurance test, I sat and listened until there was a sound or movement that signaled he'd finished. He went on too long, so I left before the end. Wiping up a resident's shit. She's judging me for the life choices I've made while I'm wiping up her ass. "Look at what you're doing. There's no way to earn a living. I wouldn't do this, and I am this." Yeah, I better look back at these. I've got some kind of weird. Got some weird stuff going on, but I like it. Right. Yeah, but it's good stuff for the book. I've got so many of these. I've been keeping journals since I was just notebooks. I've got books and books of stuff since I was 7 years old. I'll go back to an older one here. Well, I say older one. These were during my stand-up years. So these are all from when I started stand-up, not going back to the really early years, which I might do in the next series, revisit some of the old journals from when I was really young. Anti-romance. Some guys say undressing a girl is the best part. But for me it's putting a knob in. That's what's really special. Putting a knob in. Gorbachev, dollop head. Granddad's burial. Why are we planting granddad? By design, the sexes are not equal physically or otherwise, but they are complementary, equally important. Men are strong and rational. Women yielding and emotional. This is all disgusting. What's this about? Men are good at navigating politics, women at nurturing family units. Men make decisions, women provide counsel. The survival of the white race depends on both sexes embracing their roles. So this, women are the nucleus from the family. This was from white power movements. Read an article in Harper's about the alt-right and white nationalism. Routine about dividing household chores. All right. I was going to preservation. Was I going to pretend I was... I think I was building up to something, write material about white nationalism. I know there was a bit about them drinking milk as a sign of their superiority, because I don't know whether it's a myth or not, that that's, I don't know, there was like European settlers who learned to process lactose because they did agrarian work with animals who produce a lot of milk, and that white nationalists would drink milk to sort of as a sign of their superiority on being able to process lactose. But then you're supposed to stop processing lactose when you stop being a baby, because you haven't got any use for it beyond that point. And so they're basically big overgrown babies bragging about that fact. 16th century German vulgarity, Martin Luther. I am like a ripe shit and the world is a gigantic arsehole. We will both probably let go of each other soon. Is that, that's great. Is that an actual, that's good. I like that. The greatest parenthetical aside in a work of nonfiction, taken from a passage in Adrian Owen's Into the Grey Zone. A neuroscientist explores the border between life and death, where he discusses the level of consciousness in one-month-old infants. Oh, yeah, and the passage was, if you scream at them, in brackets, you shouldn't. You shouldn't scream at babies. Inverse crop top, hard taut boobs. That's about, I did that bit. It's about a man who had hard taut boobs. Like, it's a guy who'd worked out, but only worked out his chest. So he had big, hard taut boobs. Felt a bit self-conscious about it. So he went to a focus group about body positivity. And they said, you need to, the stuff you feel self-conscious about, you need to own it. And so he, their suggestion to him was to create an inverse crop top. So it was a top where just the boob panel was cut out, and he'd pop through his hard taut boobs to present them to the world. Fuck. I think I was still on drugs at the time. This is a weird period in my life. Anyway, this has been a fucking great series. I probably won't return for a couple of months, but if you are a Patreon subscriber, you will continue to get bonus episodes throughout that period, and all the other bonus stuff. I'm going to get back on that again. I know I've been slacking a little bit, and that is fucking rude to all of you. So the stuff that will backdate it, it will come through within the next couple of weeks. So. Yeah, that's the end of this series. I mean, has it been, you wait 2 weeks for this final episode, has it been worth it? Nah. I think the answer to that is no way. But it is. And there's no denying that. It certainly is. Everything is. Yeah, and that is what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, I love you all. Continue to chat to me on Twitter, because the other day me and Michael fell out. We haven't talked for a week. We're back together again now. It's fine, mate. We've known each other since we were babies, so we know we're not going anywhere. But it's very bracing for him to excommunicate me temporarily, because it made me realise I have no one. Or no one I'm comfortable enough to just message whenever. So, yeah, talk to me. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Love you all.